story, Nehemiah. So part of God's story is about a guy named Nehemiah, and it goes like this. Remember God's family? They were called the Israelites because they lived in, you guessed it, Israel. But some of them lived far away from their home, and one of those guys was Nehemiah. He lived in Persia and worked for the king. One day, his brother told him that a city in Israel called Jerusalem was suffering, and many people there weren't following God anymore, and their city wasn't in very good shape. Nehemiah cried, God, you are wonderful, but your family's home is in trouble. Please help us. When I serve the king his wine today, make him pleased with me and have him do what I ask. Later, when Nehemiah served the king's wine, the king noticed that Nehemiah looked sad. So the king asked why. Nehemiah told him about Jerusalem and asked if he could go back to rebuild the wall. The king could have killed Nehemiah for asking to leave. But instead, he said go. He even helped. That's because God heard Nehemiah's prayer and answered it. Anyway, Nehemiah went to work rebuilding the wall. But little did he know he was going to need to ask for a lot more help from God. See, God and his family have always had enemies, and these enemies wanted to stop Nehemiah and the people helping him. First, they made fun of him. So Nehemiah prayed again. He said, God, some people hate us. Please get rid of them, and went back to work. Now, God does hear and answer every prayer, but sometimes not in the way we expect or even in the way we want. And at first, it seemed like God wasn't answering this one at all, because when the enemy saw that Nehemiah was still building, they planned an attack. But Nehemiah trusted that God heard his prayer even if it didn't feel like it. And God did! He caused some people to overhear the enemy's plan and warn Nehemiah. Even though the enemies were still after him, Nehemiah planned a defense and told the others, don't be afraid of your enemies. Remember the Lord. He is great and powerful. And on they worked, building, building, building. The closer the wall got to being finished, the more Nehemiah's enemies realized they couldn't stop him by making fun of him or by attacking him. Time for something else. They tried everything. They sent messages to get Nehemiah to leave the wall and meet them. He wouldn't. They hoped Nehemiah's hands would get weak. But Nehemiah had asked God to make his hands stronger. They even paid a priest to ask Nehemiah to leave the wall and come to the temple. But Nehemiah trusted God more than anyone else, even the priest. And he refused to stop doing the job God had given him. Kids, are you willing to listen to God and obey him, no matter what? Well, finally, the wall was done. God's family got to go home again, and Nehemiah's enemies found that nothing stopped God's plan. The Israelites celebrated and praised God, and as they praised, they realized how much their sins had hurt God, and they felt terrible. They told God they were sorry and thanked him for helping them. Then they made a brand new promise to follow him, and Jerusalem was once again a safe place where people honored God. And that's the story of Nehemiah. But just so you know, there's another story where God fixes something that's broken. See, one day, God would send a very special rescuer, not to save a wall, but to save the world. He made it possible for not just Israelites, but everyone in the whole world to confess their sin to God, thank him for his rescue, and follow him. And just like that old wall was made new back then, our old lives can be made new right now, because Jesus has rescued us. And that's a part of God's story. God?
It took me 13 weeks. That was my own concern showing that clip. I'm thinking, 4 minutes it takes them, 13 weeks it takes me. I don't know what to tell you. So, Red story a number of years. In fact, a number of years ago, I've been to, how many of you have ever been to Niagara Falls? Okay, a few of you have. I've been there a couple of times, and I remember one time, I think as when I was in my teens, I went, and I'm always interested in the story. I like stories, obviously, And so while I was there, they have a gift shop, and I bought a book of stories of individuals I went across the falls, which I still have. And so one of those stories starts, it's back in 1960, and it's about there's a man named James Honeycutt, who was an engineer that worked for the Niagara Parks Commission. And one of the things he loved to do, he had a little 17-foot aluminum boat, a little 7.5-horsepower engine, and he lived quite a ways up the river, 5 miles up the river from the falls, and he loved on a nice afternoon, nice evening, he got home, go out on the water for a while and just enjoy it. It's beautiful country if you've ever been there, just a gorgeous area of the United States and Canada, actually, right there. And so one evening he went out in his boat, and he actually took a couple of neighbor kids with him. One was a 17-year-old female, her name was Deanie, and then her little brother, 7-year-old Roger, went out in the boat with him, and they're out, and they're just having a great old time and just enjoying putting around and the scenery. And finally it got to the point where they needed to head back, and so James Honeycutt and Miss Honeycutt turned the boat around to head back in, and as he was turning, the engine made a weird sound and shut to a stop. And so he pulled the engine up, and right away saw what the problem was. The pin that actually engaged the propeller had actually sheared. Well, he put the engine back down and looked up, realizing he's going to have to paddle to shore, and realized that even those just probably less than 2 or 3 minutes when he was looking at what had taken place, it already ended up quite a ways downriver. And so almost with a panic, he starts rowing towards shore. And he's rowing, and if you've been up there, I mean, he's getting closer and closer, still a ways out, but the current is picking up as he gets closer to the falls. So he yells at the two kids and says, "Put your life jackets on." And he didn't even stop long enough to put his life jacket on. He just needed to keep rowing. And so he's rowing, trying to get to shore, and there comes this point where he is rowing along where he realizes we're not going to make it. And in fact, right about that moment, they hit a place where there were some rapids, and it flipped the boat, and it tossed all three of them out. Fortunately for Deanie, it tossed her out away from the other two and towards the shore. When that happened, there were two men, I don't know if they're fishing or what, but they were on the shore and they were watching this take place, and they saw Deanie and they saw where she hit the water, and they realized that they felt like if they could form a chain between the two of them and one of them step out in the water, they might be able to reach her and grab her before she went over the falls. And so that's what they did, and they grabbed a hold of her and were able to drag Deanie to safety. But James and little 7-year-old Roger were last seen going over the falls clutching each other. Now, I tell that story because it's an illustration of life, and it won't come as a surprise to any of us, but the reality is much of life is paddling upstream. Much of it is dealing with things in life, situations, ways that our life can move, fall apart, that if we're not actively moving away from it, it will drag us down towards disaster, towards destruction. Probably all of us have been to those points in life. I have in my life where, and I would say maybe especially when it comes to the walk with God. If you're a follower of Christ, if you have accepted that gift that God offered, that gift of forgiveness, He says that our relationship with Him has been broken because of our sin. And remember, we talked about this. Sin, by definition, is doing something that would be contrary to the will of God for our lives. And His will for our lives is based on what He knows is very best. So when we choose to sin, we choose to take ourselves out of that blessing, that best that He knows we need as our designer. And so when we've sinned, and we all have, it has broken that relationship. And God has provided what is needed to restore the relationship. First of all, by offering forgiveness as a gift. No strings attached, no do this, this, and this, just simply I accept it or I reject it. So if you've accepted that gift, you are a child of God. He adopts you into His family. And the reality is as a child of God, there are certain decisions we're going to make, just like any relationship. Healthy relationships are based on some healthy habits. That's true in this relationship as well. And so the illustration of this current that we're in is we're all in that. We're all in a current that will suck us away from our best if we're not constantly paddling forward, making right decisions, doing right things, especially for a believer, doing things that line up with God's will for us so he can bless us. So that's the story. I remember standing at that very spot. And they talk about being weak in the knees. I can remember I had, you almost, in fact, it's so powerful right there that you have these thick bars around you, you have this sense that it could almost drag you down. It's an amazing thing if you've been there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And the reality is in life there's that kind of thing. There's those things that want to drag us down. Our enemy, certainly Satan, wants to drag us down. One interesting, just a sidebar, little Roger, 7-year-old Roger, was the first person to ever go across the falls not in some kind of a protective device to survive. He actually survived that fall. James Honeycutt did not. Now, the reason I present that or started off that way is because really the story we've been following of Nehemiah and the Israelites lines up directly with that. That whole idea of how right actions, paddling upstream, whatever, however you want to say it, doing the right things consistently in life, keep us safe, keep us moving forward, and stopping does not mean we stay in the same place. It means we will go backwards towards disaster. It's a great illustration. In fact, as we moved into this book, we found the Israelites exactly there, in disaster, in rubble, in destruction, and it was because of choices they had made, things that they had let go of in their life that they should not have, because they were the things that kept them safe in that relationship. But last week we left them, and they were having a party. Remember, they were in a celebration, and the circumstance that allowed for the party was that their job, the rebuilding of the wall, at least that part of the job, was done, and so they took the time to celebrate. But as we discovered, it was not the finishing of the wall so much that they were celebrating as it was what they had learned about God in the midst of that, as he protected them, as he guided them, as he provided for them, as he did so much. Even in, they had enemies on the outside. They were constantly attacking them, even threatening physical attack, and God provided for them, took care of them. They had problems within that God provided the wisdom to resolve. So they've seen God do so much in providing and protecting them, that they're celebrating, they're excited, even though they still have some hard things ahead of them. Remember, some of them are actually going to deliberately leave behind their nice homes, their nice yards, and move into the destruction to help start rebuilding the city itself, now that the wall's in place. So it's not that everything's easy for them, it's just that they see God, and they're celebrating that. And in fact, remember, we talked about the celebration. It was loud. It was full of music and celebration. And in fact, it was so loud, it says that the sound of rejoicing could be heard from far away. It was so loud, somebody maybe called cops. I don't know, this is too loud. That neighbor, I could never get them to be quiet. They're always having these parties. So I don't know, it was that kind. But it was loud. Now, if you want to, you saw that we're going into chapter 13, which is the last chapter of the book. So you who are saying, boy, this thing's gone forever, and we're done. Today's the end. We're going to draw it to a close. So we're in chapter 13, and chapter 13 opens up where we left off. They're still in the party, and we talked about they did some interesting things in their party. For one thing, they invited the preachers, the Levites. We talked about, well, that's kind of unusual. Lots of times you don't have one pastor there when you're having a party. But then here we also find out, as 13 opens up, that at the party, they actually requested that the Bible, the book of Moses, which is the Old Testament scripture, is what they had. The New Testament hadn't been put together yet. But on that day, the book of Moses was read aloud in the hearing of the people. They wanted to hear from God. Really, really unusual what's going on. But as we trace this story, and remember, especially the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks, as the people have, kind of got done with the physical work that needed to be done, and had a chance to pause and say, okay, now what is it that put us in the midst of that destruction in the first place? Let's think that through so we don't go down that path again. And we actually saw them do that, and they came up with, I actually put words to their list, but every one of these things came out of things that they said. In fact, we'll look at a few of them in a moment. But here's part of what they said. They said, you know, if we're going to protect ourselves, then we need to be people of integrity. Because integrity keeps us safe. It protects us. Even they, and remember, Nehemiah is falsely accused of a number of things, but he was a man of integrity, so the accusations didn't stick because the people that knew him knew better. And then they said, we're going to make sure that we revere God, that we keep God in the right place. We surround our hearts, our wants, our likes, our direction, our decisions around God. He's going to be the top of our priority list. They made a decision to constantly be doing what they needed to do to grow spiritually, to grow in that relationship with God. They said, we recognize that in the past what we've done is we've allowed the enemy, Satan, and individuals that are on the side of Satan that are bent on destruction, that are opposing God, we've allowed them to permeate us. We're not going to do that anymore. And then they said, we want to hear the word of God, as they did in this celebration. We want to hear from God's word, and then we're told that they passed this on. And so that was kind of the list they came up with. We called this not dropping your guard, how to keep your guard up. So we dig into today's passage, and as we dig into chapter 3, I want to just jump us ahead a few verses, because here's where Nehemiah is. Nehemiah is kind of the hero of the story. God has done amazing things. In fact, remember, back in the beginning, Nehemiah wasn't even in that area. He was 800 miles away. He was serving the king of Persia, who was the powerhouse of the world. And he, in fact, not only was he serving him, he was his most trusted advisor and protector. And then he hears about what's happening to Jerusalem and how his ancestral ground, this place where his people were from, the destruction it's in, and his heart breaks. And remember, he began to pray, Lord, I don't know what I can do, but let me do something. And so he prayed for an opportunity to talk to the king, if you remember. And so we find out as we dig in and get down to chapter verses 6 and 7 that he has now returned to Persia. After all this, after the rebuilding, and the people have elected him governor, and things are finally turned the corner, and they seem to be on the upswing, they're moving forward, they got great things happen, and Nehemiah leaves. And, you know, I kind of look at him and say, well, wait a minute, what's going on there? You know, that seems to be really the worst possible timing. Why would you leave your people right now? Everything's going smoothly, and they're looking to you for leadership. Why then? Well, you know, it goes back to that list, quite frankly. It goes back to that first one. Part of the people had decided, part of their protection was that they'd be people of integrity. Nehemiah had demonstrated all along that he was a man of integrity. So what am I talking about here? Well, if you remember, way back in the beginning of the study, when Nehemiah was saying, Lord, somehow I need to do something for my people. And he prayed for an opportunity to talk to the king of Persia. And remember, you didn't just go up and say, hey, king, I need to talk to you about something. You had to be invited into a conversation. And so that's what he's praying for. He's praying that somehow this mighty, this powerful king who actually could, if he didn't handle everything just right, could actually say, hey, yeah, I'm done with you. Take this man out and have him killed. That's the power he had. He prayed that somehow God would open up the conversation, and God did. And in that conversation, Nehemiah spells out what's going on with his people, and he requests an opportunity to go down and help them. And here's what the king says. How long will your journey take? When will you be back? Nehemiah was important to him. He trusted Nehemiah. He needed his counsel. And it pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. So Nehemiah's integrity, even though I suspect that the timing for, you know, it didn't seem right at all. I was like, oh, man. But he had told the king he would come back on such and such a day, and so he kept his word, even though it was probably very difficult to do. And so he went back, and we're not sure how long he was there. Could have been a few months, probably more likely a couple of years. But after an appropriate amount of time, when he felt that it was the right to do and he could ask, he He said, sometime later I asked his permission and he came back to Jerusalem. So he goes back to his people, and I'm sure he's excited. You know, when he left, it was just, things were just charged up. So much good had happened. They'd seen God's preservation of them and the way he provided for them. And so he left them, and they just were excited about what's next. And I'm sure he was going back with that anticipation of jumping in and joining with them. But unfortunately, they quit paddling. Even though, and we're going to see in a moment, they had made a number of commitments, but the reality is, in a very short period of time, they quit doing the thing that they themselves said we need to keep doing, because they'll keep us safe, they'll keep us moving forward, they'll keep us growing, they'll keep us in line with the heart of God. But they let them go. And the reality is, man, it happens quick. That backward current gets stronger and stronger. Some of you have experienced that. I've experienced it. And before we know it, we're right, ready to go over the falls, or too late, we're over. He goes back and he finds out that things have been coming better. But let me read you, because let's go back. I'm not just pulling this out of the sky. Here's what they said. Here's what they determined. Here's what they said, starting with verse 29 of chapter 10. Here's the things that they committed to, that we've talked about. All of these now join their brothers, the nobles, and bind themselves with a curse and an oath to follow the law of God given through Moses, the servant of God, to obey carefully all the commands, regulations, and decrees of the Lord our God. We promise not to give our daughters in marriage to the peoples around us or take their daughters for our sons. And when the neighboring peoples bring merchandise or grain to sell on the Sabbath, we will not buy from them on the Sabbath or on any holy day. And every seventh year we will forgive working the land and will cancel all the debts. What they're saying is this, Lord, we realize, I mean, he had laid out clearly, and this is not for us today, but for the Israelites and his people, he laid out some very clear rules for their protection, for their personal health, so that he could provide for them, so that they would learn to trust him, all these things. And what they realize is, we let all that go, and we remember now what all those things are, and we're going to continue to make sure they're a part of our life. In fact, they go on. And there are other things. We're going to bring a portion. We're going to make sure that we're studying the Word. We're going to make sure we are taking care of the temple and providing for the Levites so that they can continue to minister to us and worship. They made all these commitments because they knew these are the things that keep us safe. But then Moses gets back. In fact, verse 1 goes on. On that day that the book of Moses, or Nehemiah gets back, on that day when the book of Moses is read, it's really interesting. This is the first thing that God, as they're reading the Word of God, he wants to make sure they know. Hearing aloud in the hearing of the people, there it was found written that no Ammonite or Moabite was ever to be admitted to the assembly of God. Now, so right away God says, first thing that's really important is you really need to be careful. Remember their commitment. We look at this again. Be careful of who you allow to influence you. And this is not a racist thing. I know sometimes people will look up and say, well, he's telling them to be racist. No, that's not what's going on. These are people who had demonstrated over centuries now that they were not only did they not believe in God, they were opposed to God. In fact, they were opposed to his people. They were going to do everything they could to wipe the Israelites off the face of the earth. They demonstrated that. And they had tried a number of ways. In fact, one of these people groups at one point actually tried to pay a prophet to pronounce a curse on the Israelite people. And he wanted to do it, but God wouldn't let him. So they're evil people, and they've consistently shown that. And so God is saying, don't invite them into your worship. Now, he's made provisions for individuals to come into their worship to follow the God. That's not the point here. It's just as a people group, as another congregation as a cult in that day who worship false gods and idols, he's saying, don't mix yourself with them, because if you do so, it will dilute what you believe, and soon you'll start heading backwards in the water. So that was his warning, and we find out, Nehemiah finds out, that that's one of the first things they did. Not only did they invite them, to be a part of who they were. They were actually intermarrying, just like they had heard right from the start. Don't do that. This is dangerous. They're going to bring their idols with them into the marriage. In fact, they would often make you commit to be worshiping their gods. And he says, don't. And they've already moved that direction. So one of the commitments they made was, we're going to limit our exposure to the enemy. And within a short period of time, they started saying, it's not that big of a deal. Why can't I do that? Why shouldn't I be a part of it? Yeah, I've learned. I know what to watch out for. I know where my limits are. You know, what do we do? All those things we say. I can do a little bit and not, and that's what they've done. And they've been sucked into evil in a short period of time. They also promised that they would be people that they reverence God, that he would be what they would wrap their hearts, their priorities around, that they would commit to spiritually grow, things that cause them to grow. In fact, here's part of what they said. We won't allow God ungodly evidence, influence. You look at that in a moment in chapter 10. We are going to be careful to follow God's commands. We're going to keep the Sabbath holy. Now, we aren't in a time where the Sabbath is one of our rules that God has given us. It's certainly not a bad idea to make sure you set apart time that is devoted to God, to rest, to be quiet, to hear from him. But they had committed, we will keep that Sabbath holy. That was part of it. We're going to make sure we provide for our worship, for our temple, for our leaders, so that they can help us in worship. Ultimately, we're going to not neglect our relationship with God. We're going to make spiritual growth our priority. All these things that they committed. And one by one, they set each one on their side. Remember Tobiah, look at that first verse. Remember, he's an enemy. He has actively opposed them each step of the way. And when Nehemiah gets back, not only is Tobiah, he hasn't just like he's moved into town. He actually, one of his relatives is the priest, and the priest has actually given him a room to live in the temple. In fact, this particular room is supposed to be the room where they store the treasuries that people give to provide for the temple and provide for the Levites so they can lead them in worship. What's that tell you about the treasury? They haven't been doing that. They don't need the space. So they stick to Tobiah, an enemy. They have intermarried, as we already talked about. They said, we're going to be careful to obey God's commands. We're going to keep his Sabbath day holy. Nehemiah gets back, and you know what? They said, yeah, boy, you know, but we lose a lot of money. And remember, this is a rule for them in that time. We lose a lot of money when we open up on the Sabbath. And so, you know, God won't really care. We'll just open up later or whatever. And he comes back, and now it's completely neglected. They're not, you know, they're busy. They forgot all about worshiping because got to get, you know, got to be all my dad. But it hasn't helped because they've ended up not having, and because of that, they're tighter than ever because that's the way it works. I got to tell you, it's always worked that way. And so pretty soon they're saying, well, I can't really afford to give to the temple this week. I'll do it next week. I'll catch up. And they didn't. And pretty soon they let all these things that they at one point said, no, we've got to stay firm on these because they're what keep us paddling upstream. Keep us from going back into that destruction, that disaster, from going over the falls. And we're not going to ever do that again. And we did. Didn't we? Maybe the promises you made your spouse. Don't never go that direction again. And so they agreed to give him a try, and a couple weeks you're good, and then you're back. And then the Bible says, if it's not right with your spouse, it's not right with God, so you're back. I mean, so it could be so many other things. You know, you got into that situation financially. You know it's because you didn't make godly decisions. And so now you promise, and you've asked him, hey, help me get out of this, and he helps you, and you said, I'll never, ever do that again. And pretty soon you're right back. See, the fall's coming. Swimming desperately for sure. When I was in Bible college, I had my favorite professor. I could tell you his name, but he just had
so much to do with setting the course of my heart for ministry. In fact, his class, we'd sit in his class, and he was one of those teachers that, you know, you just get in the dialogue and you give one thing in because you're talking about things that are so significant. And so much of my philosophy of ministry, of my heart for what the church should be about, is, came from that class, from those conversations with that man. Just dynamically, it impressed my heart. Something I value, held high esteem. Not long after I graduated, a couple of years after that, and he actually was a pastor of a very large church in Denver as well. And but not long after I graduated, word got around that he had gotten in a relationship with a woman who wasn't his wife. Pretty soon that marriage dissolved, and he married this next woman. And a few years later, I heard that he got in another relationship. And then, but eventually, he moved off the picture. This man who had so much to do with so many hearts, young guys' hearts, young women's hearts, getting on track, but his own life fell apart because he quit paddling upstream. Eventually, he left the country and moved down to South America because he needed to get away from all the bad stuff, all the things people knew about him. And a few weeks ago, actually, for a professor, I don't know, I have a friend who's going to Denver Seminary right now. He was talking about a class, and him and I talked about my teacher before and the impact that he made on my life. And so he said, hey, Paul, he wrote me an email. He said, I've been in his class, and this professor mentions the name of that prof you're talking about. And so I go and visit with him. I said, do you know anything about him? He said, yeah, I was just down in South America a few years ago. I was in a small village, and I ran into him. And he says he's down there living pretty humbly. Life has been pretty much destroyed for him. But recently, last few years, he's kind of plugged in. He saw a real need for, that was one of those villages that the human traffickers would come in and they'd offer families money because they're really struggling in poverty. If they would give them their daughters, promising they'd give a better life for their daughters, but they weren't. They were still taking themselves home and trafficking. So he says he's just seen that, and so he's gathering funds, and he's starting to help those families so they don't make those kind of decisions. And so as they were visiting, this prof from Denver Seminary said to my old teacher, made this statement. He says, interesting, God didn't give up on you. Teacher's answer that was, he should have. But you know what the reality is? He won't. Ever. You may be heading off the falls right now. You're one of those spots, and you're like, you've done everything that you can tell, the current's taking you over. We already gone over. You're in that position right now. We don't know. You're here and you smile because that's what we do at church. But the reality is your life is in rubble. And the enemy or you yourself may convince you that God should give up on you or that he has. And I'm telling you that is not the truth. He never gives up. He just waits for us to wake up and recognize that his heart is for us and to regroup and get back on track. You know, there's a church in the book of Revelation, and it talks about they're in the middle of the destruction, things are falling apart. And he says, because you left your first love. But he doesn't say, following that, so tough luck for you. No, he says, so go back to where you left. Start again. That's the message. You and I in here. Those people were back in destruction in a very short period of time. In fact, faster than ever before, and yet God's message still to them is, in fact, look how they look at the book of Nehemiah. It's remember what we need to do. Start again. That's his message for you and I. For regardless of where you are today, it is not too late. Father, thank you. Thank you. We need these messages of hope because sometimes we feel hopeless. And especially when we recognize that the place we're in, the reason we're there is because of decisions we've made. Decisions that have taken us toward disaster, not We've let go. We quit paddling. And thinking that we could stay the same place, and it's not true. We've gone backwards and we've headlong and fallen off the paddle. Why feel like we have just done? Might be in that place. The message they've heard from you is, I'm ready. Are you? If a spirit is lost, that's it. Are you thinking yourself?
Sing it to me, Lord.
Thanks so much for worshiping with us. We'll see you next week.